Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Steve Salmers, Sports Radio 101.9 FM,
The Fan,
and Sports Radio 66, WFAN.
And we shall call this segment a segment with Mike Florio. And he is, of course, with ProFootballTalk.com, Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSN. That is Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And his Twitter handle, at ProFootballTalk. Mike Florio, happy holiday season to you and yours, and thanks for a couple of minutes once again.
Steve, happy to do it, buddy. Good to be with you again.
You bet. From last night, I'm not going to ask you who do you think is going to be MVP. I'm going to ask you who do you think is going to finish second to Lamar Jackson.
Well, I don't think anybody should finish second to Lamar Jackson. I think it should be 50-0 unanimous vote for Lamar Jackson. There are 50 AP voters who cast ballots on the various official postseason awards, and I think it should be every member of that panel casting their ballot for Lamar Jackson. And I said kind of jokingly but kind of seriously last night on Twitter after Jackson threw 5 touchdown passes and set the single-season quarterback rushing record, anybody on that panel who doesn't vote for Lamar Jackson should have their vote taken away.
and of course, we're all speculating for the sake of conversation here that Russell Wilson might be the number two guy. But for sure, Lamar Jackson, with his speed, I understand that the Ravens borrowed from the Baltimore Orioles their radar speed gun to get a handle on how fast Lamar Jackson really is. The Jets just didn't have anybody. And, of course, the Jets have had a long season to begin with, and the Jets have been having their issues with just about everybody they have played, but certainly they were not in the same neighborhood as Lamar Jackson last night.
No, and we've seen that time and again all season long. Defenses just cannot keep up with Lamar Jackson. He keeps them on their heels just long enough as they try to decide whether it's going to be a pass or it's going to be a run. And by the time they decide which way the play is going, it's too late to do anything about it. And this guy is playing exactly the way he played at Louisville, that same dual threat, and it translates to the NFL. And I remember when he got drafted saying, you know, if this guy ends up playing at the next level that he played at Louisville, people are going to regret letting him hang around until number 32. And one last point on the MVP vote, because you've touched on something that I think needs to be amplified. The NFL should have, like the Heisman Trophy, a first place, second place, third place vote, so others do get some recognition when they publish the final tally. So it's not unanimous Lamar Jackson, as it should be. So it's Lamar Jackson, then Russell Wilson, then Deshaun Watson or whoever else. Because I think those guys deserve something. So even though they don't win it, they deserve something that separates them from everyone else. And the way the NFL does this, it's quite possible that nobody's going to get a vote of any kind other than Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm. And you touch on something, because a couple of years ago, you had Sam Darnold coming out. You had Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and, oh yeah, Lamar Jackson. Where'd you have Lamar Jackson among those five?
Well, you know, I didn't have him at number one, and I didn't have him at number five. I had him in the middle with that understanding that if he plays like he does at Louisville, he would end up being a superstar at the NFL level. And, you know, the story that I heard right after the draft regarding the Ravens, they were sitting at number 16, and they knew the guy was going to be great, and they wanted him. And there were people high up in the organization pushing for the Ravens to take him at number 16. But they sensed that others didn't feel the same way about Lamar Jackson, and they believed they could play the board a little bit, and they traded down into the low 20s and took a tight end in Hayden Hurst and then swooped back in at number 32 and got Jackson and they were euphoric because they read it exactly right. There wasn't another team out there that felt the way they did about Lamar Jackson. They kept him from plummeting out of the first round altogether because they believed in him all along, and they had a plan for him. I mean, that's the key. We see so many quarterbacks that come to the NFL and they fail because the teams don't commit to the idea that whatever it was that made us like him at the college level is how we need to use him at the next level. And we've seen that pendulum swing toward the direction of common sense, where teams are now saying, well, who cares what our system is? We like this guy, and we're going to build an offense around it. And what the Ravens have done the last 2 years is remarkable, and they've built the offense around the skills and abilities of Lamar Jackson, and that's one of the reasons why he's likely going to be the unanimous MVP.
Sure. From what you've seen of Sam Darnold, your impressions?
Well, I still think it's too early to make any final determination because he doesn't have the help around him like a Lamar Jackson has. Last year was kind of a strange season, and this year there was hope, but he comes down with mono. And you fight through that, and you come back, and he had the great game, his first contest back against the Dallas Cowboys with the AFC Offensive Player of the Week, and then he was seeing ghosts the following Monday night against the Patriots, and it's kind of been up and down since then. But the Jets, just like the Giants, they have so much work to do on the offensive line and also the Giants on the defensive line that it's hard to have the core to have a great football team. It's hard for the skill position players and the quarterbacks to stand out the way they need to. And I think that's the challenge for the Jets. Adam Gase has shown in the past that he can work well with quarterbacks. And I know that some of the media up there and some fans are decidedly against Gase, but it looks like he's going to get another year at least to try to turn this around. And I think that they'll all benefit from another year of working together and that they'll benefit from an offseason where Joe Douglas, the new GM, can try to find some help for the offensive line to buy Sam Darnold a little more time.
Eli Manning, is he retiring at the end of this season?
That would be my guess, Steve. And, you know, I sensed that he was going to get a little mini farewell tour all along. And this Daniel Jones ankle injury is a convenient way to put Eli back on the field and put him out in the home stadium at a time when maybe fans wouldn't be inclined to show up. Maybe they'll show up on Sunday to say goodbye to Eli Manning, and maybe he'll be playing there again week 17 against the Eagles. But I think when the season's over, it's clear the Giants aren't going to bring him back. And I don't think there's going to be another team out there that's going to give him the kind of offer that screams, you're our starting quarterback. And I don't think he wants to go to a team where he's the starter in March, but then in late April they draft somebody and there's an expiration date on his starting job, just like there was going into the 2019 season. So I don't think he's going to find something that pays him the kind of contract that makes it clear that he's the guy. I mean, think about all of the free agent quarterbacks that are going to be on the market this year, from Eli Manning to Drew Brees to Tom Brady, Philip Rivers. And then you've got the Jameis Winston, Ryan Tannehill situation, where who knows what's going to happen with those two guys. Maybe they're going to be available, maybe they aren't. There's going to be a lot of quarterbacks out there, and I just can't think of a team that is going to feel compelled to make a competitive offer to Eli Manning that says to Eli, you're our guy for all of 2020 and maybe beyond.
How about Ryan Tannehill revitalizing his career for the most part injured in Miami, not very successful in Miami with Adam Gase? What he's doing now is remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. And when Gase became the head coach in 2016, my understanding was that he had the flexibility after one season to decide whether or not to get his own quarterback. And he took to Ryan Tannehill, and Tannehill had a great season until he suffered a low hit from Calais Campbell, who at the time was playing for the Cardinals, in December. And that derailed the rest of the season for Tannehill. Matt Moore came in, took over. The Dolphins made it to the playoffs, and they lost a playoff game in the wild card round at Pittsburgh. And Ryan Tannehill had partially torn ACL at the time. The Dolphins decided not to have it repaired, and they went to 2017 training camp. And on the third day, I think it was, of practice, it went the rest of the way. So, you know, he's had some bad luck. He has shown some ability in the past. And there are people talking about him being the comeback player of the year, and I can get behind that. The only thing is, what's he coming back to, right? I mean, he never was great, but he's finally, 8 years into his career, he was in the same draft class with Andrew Luck, RG3, and Russell Wilson. He's finally living up to the potential that made him the eighth overall pick in the draft, and he's going to get paid a lot of money the way he's playing as long as he stays healthy. He's 6-1, and the Titans are in great position to make it to the playoffs. They play the Texans twice in the final 3 weeks. And if they win those two games, the Titans will be the AFC South champions.
Yeah, and it certainly helps Tannehill to have Mr. Henry and A.J. Brown to help him out with the kind of weapons they are. And they have been just as hot over the last so many games as Tannehill has. First coach to go, will it be Pat Shurmur once we get to Black Monday, or will it be Jason Garrett?
Well, you know, in recent years, Black Monday has become Black Sunday, where we know a lot of the firings by dinner time on Sunday night, and by Monday, there's just a stray one or two that happens that maybe we didn't expect. And there's always that one surprise. Last year, it was Marvin Lewis. We didn't expect that he was going to get fired, and he was let go by the Bengals. And this year, who knows what the surprise will be. But my short list right now, in addition to the two that are obviously vacant in Washington, Carolina, I think it's Jason Garrett, Pat Shurmur, Freddie Kitchens, and Doug Marrone. Those are the four to watch. And then there's that potential for a curveball. There's that potential that somebody's going to retire. There's that potential that somebody's going to want out of where they are. And I think Garrett has a chance of lasting longer than Shurmur because Garrett has a chance of extending his season beyond week 17. That's the only thing that keeps him and Shurmur from being gone at the same time. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the NFC East next year, there's going to be three new head coaches if it all unfolds the way we think it's going to. And I think it's going to go that way. It's obvious at this point with Garrett, unless he at least gets the Cowboys to the NFC Championship. And with Shurmur, he's 7-22 through 29 regular season games. And Ben McAdoo got whacked with a 13-15 record through 28 regular season games. He didn't even get to finish his second season. I think at this point, it's a foregone conclusion. Shurmur's out. The only question is, does Dave Gettleman go with him?
Right. Well, and here's the interesting thing. Ron Rivera and Gettleman, as you know, have a relationship. If Gettleman stays, we're all assuming that Ron Rivera might be the next head coach.
The moment that the Panthers fired Ron Rivera, I said Dave Gettleman needs to start banging the drum for Rivera to be the next coach of the Giants, because that's the thing that saved him. Because, you know, if the Giants fire Shurmur and they start looking for another coach, depending upon who they look for, that next coach may say, I'm not comfortable working with Dave Gettleman. I want somebody else at general manager. And the Giants have always been a team that has a strong GM. I don't know that they would necessarily give the coach the power to run the show and then basically go out and hire a guy who sets the table for him. But you could have a situation where, just as a simple matter of coaches being willing to take the offer, they're just going to say no if Gettleman's the GM. And whether they're hiring the GM or if the Giants hire another GM, it could be that that's what the Giants have to do to attract who they want, unless Gettleman is able to convince them that they should want Ron Rivera.
Can the New England Patriots, by the way, do you believe all this business with Belichick and the Cincinnati Bengals, do you believe Belichick's story, or does his reputation precede any comments he makes?
Well, I think the reputation justifies scrutiny and skepticism of the story that came from the Patriots, but I believe that the Patriots are not that arrogant, stupid, and audacious to have a guy in Patriots gear with a camera sitting in a row in the press box filming the Bengals sideline with an entire army of Bengals representatives sitting one row behind him in the press box. I mean, that is as gutsy as a move as anybody would ever pull off. And it was a stupid chain of events. It was a comedy of errors. They were doing a documentary of what an advanced scout does. And so they were showing what the advanced scout sees when he's sitting in the press box looking at the opposing sideline. Now, that said, I think the NFL, as part of its investigation, needs to demand that the Patriots turn over all digital records, emails, texts, phone logs, to confirm completely and conclusively that there are no tentacles connecting this band of idiots that was at the game between the Browns and the Bengals and football operations. And if you can confirm, if the NFL can confirm there's no connection, then you buy the Patriots story, you fine them $250,000 because they nevertheless did violate the rules, and you move on. But if it turns out that there is any connection between these yahoos and the football operation, that's when draft picks come into play, and that's when you start being very skeptical of Bill Belichick's excuse. And here's the other side of it, too, that people don't realize, Steve. It's entirely possible Bill Belichick's telling the truth, because whoever it is beneath Belichick that has put this system in place hasn't told him that he has it. Then you have plausible deniability for Bill Belichick. So he may be clueless as to what others beneath him are doing, just like he was clueless when it came to the Deflategate all those years ago.
Are they going to get by without a kicker?
Well, they still have who they have, Nick Folk. He came back. You know, whether or not he counts as a legitimate kicker remains to be seen. But that's the position that can kill you at the worst possible time. And I think back to the one year they haven't made the Super Bowl since 2014. 2015, when they lost to Denver in the AFC Championship game, it was a missed extra point by Steven Gostkowski that haunted them late in the game and forced them to go for two. So, you know, it's that's a position where you need to have somebody that is reliable. And right now, they don't. And it's amazing. For a position where there really are plenty of guys out there who can kick a football long and far and generally between those two pipes, there aren't a lot of guys who can do it under pressure. And we're seeing that this year because there are a lot of guys who can't make their kicks. It's really started ever since they moved the extra point line, the snap line from the 2 to the 15. That has taken away that easy confidence-building chip shot that guys can come out and do to get that one point. It's kind of like it just keeps you, you know, keeps you lathered up. It keeps you ready to go. Now you never have that. Every kick that a kicker has to attempt is a challenge, and it's just a completely different mental dynamic. And I think that's why we're seeing these kickers struggle over the past few years.
And of course, Brady, it's a good thing Brady has Edelman over the middle, and it's a good thing he has White over the middle. There's not much else. Is Brady showing his age, Mike?
Well, I think that's part of it. Two observations on that. Because of the way that Brady was so visibly upset with his young receivers in that game against the Texans on NBC, where you could see him on the sidelines, very animated, I think the Chiefs wisely looked at that and said, hey, simple game plan. We'll double Julian Edelman. We'll double James White. We're going to force Tom Brady to throw the ball to the guys he doesn't have faith in, to the young receivers that he doesn't trust the way that he should. That's the way to slow this offense down. And when it comes to Brady's age, and look, anybody who puts on the uniform and crosses that thick white line, I've got immense respect for them. They are immensely brave and courageous. But go back and look at the key play in that game, 4th and 3, the throw to Edelman in the end zone. Brady doesn't stand in there with Frank Clark bearing down on him and deliver the ball and worry about the hit later. He's bailing out to avoid the hit as he's throwing the ball. That's what you do when you're 42 years and 3 months old and you don't want to have your aspiration to play until you're 45 get derailed by some guy in his mid-20s who's in a position to blow you apart. And that's a concern. That's a concern. Because look at Lamar Jackson, who's 22. He stands in there. He got hurt last week standing in there against the Bills when he found Hayden Hurst for a 61-yard catch and run for a touchdown. He took a hit to the lower waist and he injured his quadricep muscle, and that happens. Brady, I think, as part of his desire to play as long as he can, is making business decisions. And the business decision he made last week made it harder for that pass to be caught by Julian Edelman for what would have been the game-tying touchdown.
We're talking to Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, live on NBC Sports Radio, This You Should Know, and NBC Sports Network, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and ProFootballTalk.com. Twitter handle for Mike, at ProFootballTalk. The 49ers, are they going to be a number one seed, or are they going to end up a number five seed?
I think it's all going to come down to Week 17, Steve. Seattle Seahawks hosting the 49ers, a rematch of that epic Monday night game that we saw several weeks ago when the Seahawks won the game at the very end of the extra period. And I think, frankly, you know, the NFL has got to decide which of those 16 Week 17 games gets peeled out of the afternoon and sent to primetime on NBC. And I think a game that potentially has the one seed versus the five seed riding on the outcome is as attractive as any. And it would be a tough, tough fight. And the other thing about that is whoever loses that game, and I have a feeling it's going to be as intense of a regular season game as we ever see in the NFL nowadays. Mm-hmm. Whoever loses is going to have to play the next weekend at the NFC East champion. Mm-hmm. And if the Cowboys find a way to finally kind of get their heads out of their butts, and if they beat the Eagles next week and they at that point have the division tied up, which may not happen, but if that would occur, if they would be in a position where they can rest their starters Week 17, that gives them a little extra chance to kind of get ready for a team that may be limping in, and it may be the 49ers, it may be the Seahawks, and it would be a shame if that team gets knocked out by the NFC East champion. But I'm kind of projecting forward to what may happen to whoever loses that game week 17. And if it is the 49ers or the Seahawks, whoever loses it, they may have a harder time than expected against the NFC East champion. It shouldn't be that way. They shouldn't have to go on the road. But that's the way the NFL does it, and I don't see the NFL changing it.
And let me just let everyone know, again, with Mike Florio, and this is WFAN and WFAN-FM New York, a radio.com sports station. All right, so the 49ers had the tough three games, the litmus test it was supposed to be, with Green Bay and, of course, with Baltimore and with New Orleans that win two out of the three. After Atlanta, and I want to know from you, is this the prototypical trap game? Because after the three tough games they have played, then they have, after Atlanta, the Rams and Seattle, as you allude to. Does this give Matt Ryan, Matty Ice, and the Falcons a good chance of upsetting the 49ers?
You know, it's funny, Steve, just as your producer called tonight, I was working on an item at ProFootballTalk.com based on some press conference comments today from Kyle Shanahan, the coach of the 49ers, explaining that it's not difficult for him to get the message across to his players that this is a game that they need to be leery about, that the Falcons have looked very good in recent weeks, that they are capable of beating the 49ers. They beat the Saints in their own building much more easily then the 49ers won the game in that same building. And just last weekend, the Falcons handled the Carolina Panthers. So they've looked very good each of the last 5 weeks. Ever since coming out of their bye, they've been a much different team. That will help Kyle Shanahan get his players to ignore the fact that the Falcons are 4-9. And the other wrinkle here, too, and Shanahan hasn't touched on this in the week preceding the game. He was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons for that fateful Super Bowl 51 loss to the Patriots when the Falcons were up 28-3 in the third quarter. They blew the lead, and they had a very questionable decision to pass the ball when they were up by 7. Instead of taking a field goal, there was a sack. They got knocked out of field goal range. And so the Patriots were able to come back. Actually, they were up 8 at the time. Patriots tied the game, forced overtime, and the rest is history. Shanahan took a lot of the blame, in part because he was the guy who left. He left to become the 49ers head coach. And I think he's probably at some level upset about that. And he may not say it publicly. Now, he wasn't afraid to say it publicly as he was getting ready to play Washington earlier this year because he got a lot of acrimony toward Dan Snyder for how his dad, Mike Shanahan, was treated. But I have a feeling Kyle Shanahan sees this as a chance to maybe deliver a little revenge a couple of years after the fact. And if nothing else, it's a way to keep himself focused and get his players focused, because there may be some lingering hard feelings about the things that were said about him by Falcons coaches and players after he left. So that helps. Of all the potential trap games out there, the fact that it's his former team, and given those circumstances, that makes it even easier. And I think the 49ers will be fine. They've shown me nothing this year to make me think they lack the mental toughness to go in there and win that game easily, even after they've run the gauntlet of the Packers, the Ravens, and the Saints.
All right, give me your two Super Bowl teams looking way ahead to February. And I know a lot of things are going to happen between now and then, but do you have the two number one seeds as we speak right now? I think we might have an upset or two along the way.
Let me tell you, my official position is this. Until the teams that I have picked in the preseason, and we make our Super Bowl picks right before week one, until those teams are mathematically eliminated, I continue to make them my Super Bowl team. So I'm sticking with Patriots and Eagles, although I don't feel very good about either of them at this point, especially not about the Eagles. That said, I think that you're right. You know, the trend in recent years has been the one seed and the two seeds win in the divisional round for the most part. It used to be a 50-50 proposition. The past 4 or 5 years have seen it skew toward the teams with the byes making it to the conference championship. And then we usually see a one seed or a two seed in the Super Bowl. I see some teams out there that could disrupt that this year. I mean, obviously, the 49ers, Seahawks, whoever ends up the five seed, they could disrupt it. I could see a team like the Titans, if they get in, they could really disrupt it if they keep playing the way they've played the last 7 weeks. The Steelers are a team where the whole is always greater than the sum of the parts. And every week, they are not the better team on paper, but they have won 8 out of their last 10. They would be a dangerous team. And upon the Ravens, I don't want them showing up in the divisional round, because that's the kind of team that could go in there and not be intimidated by Lamar Jackson and company and win the game. And a dark horse in the NFC that intrigues me, and we'll see whether or not they're ready to compete in the postseason based upon whether or not they can even get there, and that's the Vikings. Because they're 9-4, Kirk Cousins has been playing well. So here we are in this stretch down the end of the season. He may need to win all three of these games to get in because the Rams are charging up hard on the outside. And if the Vikings can take care of business against the Chargers, if they can come home for the last Monday night game of the year and handle the Packers, and then if they can knock out the Bears on a short week to end the season and get in, and they may be a 12-4 sixth seed, they can be very dangerous on the road. They gained a lot of confidence. Daniel Hunter, their young pass rusher, who was the youngest in NFL history to get to 50 sacks, he told me after last week's game when he had 3 sacks that that loss to the Seahawks, even though they didn't win, the fact that they fought back, it gave them the confidence they can go on the road and beat anyone. And if they get in, they're going to be a dangerous team in the NFC.
Now, I just can't believe in Kirk Cousins.
I don't either, Steve. I don't either. Because it's all that I feel like he is hyper aware of the moment, whether it's a big play at the end of a close game or whether it's a big game at the end of a tough season. We've seen him twice in his career, Week 17, win and you're in against teams that were playing for nothing, and he lost both games. So, look, I know all the criticism he absorbed after that Bears game in Week 4, it kind of lit a fire under him. I just don't know that that fire is burning strongly enough for him to continue to do what he's done. He's been very, very good since Week 4, but they still don't have that signature win. You know, the Cowboys win felt like a signature win because it was on the road and it was in prime time. Mm-hmm. But given how the Cowboys have played since then, it's hard to be really proud about that game. They had the chance to beat the Seahawks. They had a chance to beat the Packers on the road in Week 2. And, you know, they really don't have a huge, huge game like that down the stretch. They just need to knock these games out, and then they can prove themselves on the road at some point in the playoffs.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSN, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9, and ProFootballTalk.com is Twitter handle, at Pro Football Talk. Mike, the best of the holiday season to you and yours, as we say, and thanks, really, for a good half hour, 35, 40 minutes here on The Fan.
Hey, my pleasure. Great talking to you. Have a great holiday season. Look forward to talking to you again soon, pal.
You got a deal.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.